Had to turn them on.
Okay, we are in chapter 6, page 419, 420, starting from the top. This is a continuation of a series of letters, which we would call letters of appeal for charity, and specifically for the author of his charities for helping poor people in Israel. And each one's got its own slant. This one, the Alter Rebbe really doesn't pull any punches. He's not one for pulling punches, generally. But in this one, he's not pulling any punches. And here he equates the giving of tzedakah to the receiving of emes, of truth.
Ooh.
So, you want emes, give tzedakah. That's the basic bottom line.
Whoa.
Okay?
That's huge.
Yeah. So it says, Zareya tzedakah schar emes. There are two ways to translate this verse. This is a pasuk from Mishlei, as it says right in the brackets, Mishlei Yud Aleph. And the word is on the word schar. Rashi translates the word schar as cells. So you'd read it, those who plant righteousness sell truth. The Alter Rebbe translates schar as payment.
Okay.
Or reward. Those who plant tzedakah are rewarded with truth.
Is a payment for truth.
Yeah, is paid back with truth. If you plant righteousness, you get truth. That's what the Alter Rebbe looks at. Pirush shischar zriyas tzedakah hu midas emes. That means to say, just quite clearly, just wants to clarify that he's not translating the words like the Rashi.
Right.
A normal 5-year-old translating this verse would translate it according to the Pshat and Rashi. And the Pshat and Rashi is that he who plants righteousness sells truth. Now, so the Alter Rebbe is forewarning that if you want to get truth, you want God to give you truth, give tzedakah. Usually he saves the punch for the end of the letter.
Yeah.
And believe me, there's plenty of punch at the end of the letter.
Yeah.
But here he comes out right out, both barrels blazing, okay, that this is no nothing. You want truth, give tzedakah. Uksiv titan emes Yaakov, and it says truth is given to Jacob. V'shafcha Kadosh Baruch Hu meseder navi, and this is a praise of a Kadosh Baruch Hu in the books of the prophets. In other words, this verse, titan emes Yaakov, which they made a whole it's part of incorporated into Altir Avdi Yaakov. Titan emet li Yaakov Altir Avdi Yaakov. Anyway, so it's not a request. What we're saying over here is, please give us truth and don't be afraid, my servant Yaakov. It's God gives truth to Yaakov. Don't be afraid, my servant Yaakov. Meaning to say that if you were asking God if he had his druthers would be that he would be giving us the truth, and he's just waiting for us to give us the what, how, to for him to give us to it, to give us the truth.
Yeah. Just make a keli to receive.
Exactly. Kamosha Kazu Bazar Kaddish Pirish Shakarish Baruch Hu Hanaisi Midas Emes LeYaakov. So it's explained in the Zohar, in this idea of Titan Emes LeYaakov, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives truth to Jacob. V'tzarech lahavin, that's after the Zareya Tzedakah. So he gives truth to Yaakov. V'tzarech lahavin, ki ein emes b'Yaakov chas l'shalom, HaKadosh Baruch Hu yitein lo milamayla. You have to understand, wait a minute, it's very perplexing. Jacob doesn't have any truth, chas l'shalom, so Hashem gives it to him? Now, where's the question?
Wait, Yaakov was...
Oh, that's his thing. Yaakov is the first line of the next thing. Yaakov is Midas Rahmanis. Avraham is Midas Kindness. And Yitzhak is Midas Gevura. And Yaakov is the amalgam of the two, which comes out to be Rahmanis, which Rahmanis is Emes.
Yes.
So if you ask, because you have it in the 10 spheres, what is the function of the 10 spheres? So the first, you're talking about the 6 spheres of the 6 emotions. So Chesed is easy. Chesed is kindness. And Gvura is severity. So now you come to Tiferes. Tiferes is beauty. Beauty is an adjective. It's
a bit.
What do you got to do? Okay, go ahead. Be beauty. Be kind, I can
let me
tell
know
you.
How that works out.
Be severe, okay. Be beauty.
Yes.
What's that? So that's where you have to start putting in, well, the attribute of Teferis is an expression of Rachmanis, mercy, or Emes, which is exactly the same thing. Mercy and Emes and truth are the same. We talked about this, oh, I don't know how long ago. Probably like six times ago. Because mercy does not mean kind. Kind means I'm just going to give you. If you're kind, what you wind up with is Yishmael. And only you wind up with a Yishmael, you wind up saying to God, when God says, oh, by the way, you're going to have Yitzchak to be the progenitor of the Jewish people, Avraham said, Lu Yishmael Yichel Lefanecha.
Right.
What's wrong with Yishmael?
What's wrong with
Yishmael? I got a Yishmael, use him already. Halavai, he should be the progenitor. Okay? So you could have misdirected kindness.
Right.
With severity holding back, you can hold back too much. You wind up with an Esav.
Yeah.
But you can't have too much truth.
Right.
Because by definition, truth is truth.
Truth is it.
The question is now, can you be a vessel for containing the truth? You remember the famous story about the guy looking for the candle, looking for the truth, and he finds the house with the candles? Remember that story?
No.
Tell me.
What is this story?
I
want to hear it again.
I could probably, if I sat back and thought about it, I could tell you when I told you this story.
I believe but it.
For those people who started with chapter 3 on my website and are looking through, and you can say, yeah, I remember that one. That was in chapter whatever. But guy wants to see the truth. I'm not talking about Prometheus over here. He's not looking for an honest man over here. This is an honest to goodness parable.
This is genuine stuff.
This genuinely didn't happen.
Okay.
Anyway. True story, this didn't happen. Anyway. So the guy's looking for the truth.
Yeah.
Okay, and wherever he goes, what does he see? We live in the world of falseness.
Mm.
And he's just getting really frustrated. And he's come walking through the woods, and he sees this bright light coming through the woods.
Mm.
And he walks towards it, and he gets to a clearing, and he sees this massive house, and it's like a glow. And he goes up to the front porch, got this huge porch, and he looks in the window, and he sees the place is lit up with all kinds of candles. Knocks on the door, there's no answer, the door's open, he goes in, and he's looking around. He's walking. Every room has got nothing but candles. Big candles, little candles, medium-sized candles. Everywhere you walk, candles.
That's expensive.
So he walks in, he turns around, he turns into a little cove. There's like lots of little cubbies and alcoves, and it's all shelves and it's all candles. And it must have been hotter than blazes in that house.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he turns into an alcove, and there's an old man there with a long beard. He goes, hey! What are you doing in here? The guy was from Brooklyn. So he says, I'm looking for the truth. He says, you're looking for the truth, you come for the right place. He says, what is this place? So he says, every one of these candles is a soul of a person alive on earth. You see that big one over there? That's a brand new baby just born. You see that one up on the top shelf over there? Oh, the light just went out. That guy just died, I'm sorry to tell you. So the guy says, really? Is this on the up and up? He says, I'm not kidding you, buddy. So he says, can I see my candle?
Oh.
And he says, you don't want to see your candle. I'm living in this place for decades. I never saw my candle. I don't want to see my candle. You don't want to see your candle. So he says, I'm looking for the truth. It's not mine. So he says, I'm really looking for the truth. He says, are you sure? He says, absolutely, I want to see my candle. So he says, okay, what's your name? So he gives his name, he takes out the big book, he looks up his name, and he says, okay, third floor, fourth room, second shelf on the back. He goes up the stairs, he's like really old man with arthritis, and he's creaking up the stairs. And he finally gets up to the third floor, fourth room, second shelf in the back. And he points at it and he says, that's your candle. Okay, and he takes a look at it and it's only a wick. All the oil has been used up. So he's like, oh my God. So the old man walks out and he's like, what do I do? This is like, I don't, he's just like totally beside himself. He suddenly notices on the floor, there's this massive candle. Must be somebody who's just born, going to live for 100 years. So he's thinking to himself, what would be such a terrible thing if I took some of the oil from that candle and I put it into mine? Well, it would be so no one would notice. No one would say, you know, such a terrible thing. So he's looking around. How am I going to do this? So he's looking around. Oh, a spoon. Okay? Finds a spoon. Okay? So he's got the spoon. And you can imagine it's like the movie, the timpani is going in the back. Boom, 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 boom,
exactly.
Boom, boom, yeah. Boom, boom, boom. He's got his hand is shaking, and he's lowering the spoon into the big candle, and the old man comes back and he says, wait! Are you looking for the truth? Are you looking for the truth the way you want it to be?
Yeah.
Okay? So the truth is constant. It's a consistent thing.
Right.
If there could be anything, they're always looking for, like, you have the variables and you have the constants.
Right.
Truth is constant.
The only constant.
Truth is question is, can you make a proper vessel
to receive it,
to contain the truth?
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
That's now what we want to do. So when it says Titan Emes Yaakov, so he says Yaakov didn't have any truth till now? So obviously, it's not to say that he didn't have any truth, of course.
No, of course not.
But the Alter Rebbe explained already in... What chapter? Come on, it just fell out of my head. Chapter 13.
I knew you'd find it.
That he says that a person's trying as hard as they possibly can. And they're doing it, they are at 100% efficiency. But Nebuch, they don't have great talents. They don't have good power, soul powers. But they're working 100%. Guess what? A plus. They have achieved their level of truth.
Perfect, Caleb, yeah.
So then, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Truth is truth. He says, no, not in our religion. If you want to be Lahavdila Buddhist and strive for Nirvana, so there's only one Nirvana. But in Judaism, everybody has their level of truth. And you get onto it wherever you get onto it, and that's your truth. So that even though for this big tzaddik, for Moshe Rabbeinu, if he's going to act like this person, so for him, he's going to get a D-.
Right.
But for this person, since that's all, listen, Hashem knows what Hashem made him the way he is.
Sure, of course he did.
So he's only going to be able to do as much as Hashem is expecting him to do.
Right.
So if he only does as much as Hashem is expecting him to do, so he gets an A plus. He's at MS.
Of course he does. Yes.
Because you see, for example, a 2-year-old. Hmm. Okay? If a 2-year-old can recognize letters of the alphabet, of the aleph base, and is able to say the letters,
we're elated. Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Just like that.
Just like that. We are so like, wow, what this person can do. Yeah. Now you get a 40-year-old, and the 40-year-old says, hey, look what I can do, and starts going, olive, right? You're like, come on, you know, like, hello.
Yeah.
So what's the difference? Because of the 2-year-old, that's all you expect.
Right, sure.
The 40-year-old, you expect more.
A little bit more.
Okay. So... So Yaakov, for sure, being that Yaakov was Yaakov, meaning an amalgam of Avraham and Yitzchak, that meant by definition he was truth. So now that he is the level of truth, so we now say a person can achieve greater levels and accomplishments within the range of truth
that he can receive.
And it still remains true.
Right.
So you could ask the question, the famous story about the college kid who in Yechidus in the early 1960s asked the Rebbe, if the Rebbe is a tzaddik, how come he has an eraser on his pencil? And the Rebbe answered, like, hello. The Rebbe answered, it's not for mistakes. But today I write something. Tomorrow I'll come back, I'll be a different person, I'll be on a higher level. I'll think of something better. Not that this is wrong, but what I have today now, but it's not good for today. It was good for yesterday.
The world's more perfect tomorrow.
So Yaakov is also the same thing. Yaakov started out, by definition, being the grandson of Avraham, the son of Yitzchak, was born Midas HaEmes. But there was a big difference between Yaakov, the day that he was born, and when he was on his 147th birthday.
Yeah.
So he says, Achine Moidoz Zois, the Midas Yaakov of Midas Rachmanis. It says, it's known, this is where he asked the question, that the attribute of Yaakov is Rachmanis, mercy, Vavedis Hashem, the Midas Rachmanis, who habob his Eris Rachamim Rabbi Beleva Adam al Nitzitz Alokus, Shebenav Shei, Hamarachoikim or Pnei Hashem. These long sentences. That what is the ultimate? How is it that we're talking Rachmanis? Yeah. What does it mean to serve Hashem with Rachmanis? So this is the first thing that you have to do is you have to take care of yourself. Person might think, if I'm going to have Rachmanis, so then I have to be for everybody else. So he says, no.
Thanks,
Tom. You're missing the point. Okay, so it's wrong to think that I'm only going to be for somebody else.
That's true. It's absolutely true.
Okay? You have in Perkei Avos, we just read it, person who says, Shali, Shalach, Shalach, Shali. So some people said this is like, you know, tzaddik, others don't think it's such a great deal. This is not. You know, I'm giving away everything. Okay, it's the opposite of a mosquito. We say, what's a mosquito? A mosquito takes in and doesn't give anything out.
Right.
This person is so busy giving out, he doesn't take in. Right. It's also not good.
He fails.
Okay, so he says, the first thing is, where does the Rachmanis have to be directed? Inside.
The mirror, yeah.
Direct the Rachmanis at yourself.
Right.
You have to cut yourself some slack. You have the perfect dichotomy in your own existence. You have a chelik elikam in mal mamish. He calls it a nitzis elikus. Your neshama is a spark of the infiniteness of Hashem, the highest manifestation in creation. And your body is a mud pie. And we slam the two together and say, okay, go for it. Which one is it that we see? We don't see the little spark. Yeah. We see the mud pie.
Mud pie.
Okay? And the mud pie knows I'm the big boss. And so the little spark has to get slapped all over wherever the mud pie is dragging it.
Yeah.
So you say, cut yourself some slack.
Yeah.
Have Rachmanis on the Nefesh Elokis. Because why? Because it's far away from home. You know, you think about, you know, the... You have a little kid, and the little kid's far away from its mom. So you have Rachmanis on the kid, you know, because it's so far away, and he just wants to go back to its mother.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. Your godly spark is very far from its source, and you should cut it some slack. Give in to your godly desires.
Yeah. A little, anyway.
Yeah. That's what he says, to arouse the heart over the godly soul, which is far from away from the light of the face of Hashem, Kasha, when it's going in the darkness of the vanities of the world. Okay? The mud pie is right home. It's home. It's right here.
Right.
Okay, famous story of the Baal Shem Tov. Somebody came to him and said, I'm plagued with machshavas zaras. I'm explained with foreign thoughts. And he said, nah, for you, they're right at home. Okay? Exactly. The mud pie is who determines who we are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay? It's that godliness, though, that has to be... Just cut it a little bit of slack, because it's stuck in mud. Visaris harachmanizu ba v'his b'ininus v'hadas v'gedelus Hashem. So how are you going to do that? Okay, there are many ways to do that. The school of Musar would say Mud pie? Simple. No problem. Just beat the living daylights out of it.
Yes, exactly.
Just smash the mud.
Yeah.
Okay, and that'll allow the godliness to just overflow. Okay, some people it works. But the Baal Shem Tov says you smash your body, it's not going to be too healthy.
Right.
You're not going to live long if you don't take care of yourself.
Doesn't work that way today.
So he says that, first of all, he says that we use this expression way back in chapter 29, that it says a person should be a master of accounts. Sit down and start thinking. And that's really very hard. Most people, it's much harder to think than it is to fast.
Sure.
Because what do you have to do to fast? Nothing.
Just go hungry.
Nothing. You just do nothing and you're fasting.
You can sleep through it.
Yeah, just do nothing and that's it. Okay? But to sit and to think, to engage those gears and to be productive.
That requires work.
Okay? I used to teach a class at a local community college in philosophy. Goyesha philosophy.
Yeah.
Okay? And it was a dumb class.
Yeah.
And I would start the class, after I did it like the second time, third time, so in my introduction, I would say, this is going to be the easiest hard class you'll ever have.
Right.
Because what I'm going to do in this class is get you to do something you have never done in your lives ever, till now, and that's think. By the time you get done with this class, you will know how to think. It happened one time. As soon as I said that, a kid picked himself up and walked out of the classroom, and I never saw him ever again. Scared him away.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, is that all it takes to get rid of these people? So, because people are afraid of thinking.
Right.
Yeah, the old expression, growing up, treat your mind like a bad neighborhood, don't go into it alone.
Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah, it's like scary in there. You know all the things you're going to find in there?
Oh,
all the skeletons and the cobwebs and the rusty wheels. All that stuff in there that's like, you know, the memories and the past and all that stuff. That's scary stuff.
Yeah.
So he says, no. That's, first of all, you have to learn. You have to what to think about. For that, you need to be brainwashed.
Yes.
Okay, now we use this term brainwashing in a negative connotation.
No, it's a good thing.
Okay, you sit down, somebody has a certain thing, they're captured by the communists, and they brainwash them to believe that communism is the only way to go. Okay, so that's brainwashing, okay?
Right.
But here we're talking about actually washing the schmutz out of your brain.
Right.
Because since it is the Torah, is like compared to a flame fire.
Yeah.
And sitting and learning Torah and understanding Torah is like doing Libun Gomer on your brain. If you have an oven or a barbecue and you want to kosher it,
what do you do?
You have to heat it up to 800 degrees. Okay? And everything that's in it, all the impurities that have been absorbed into the metal of that oven, that barbecue, become burnt out.
Right.
They no longer exist.
Right.
So if it is that a person has got schmutz in their brain, all kinds of impurities and things that thinking about that they shouldn't have been thinking all this time, and that includes also a lot of those things are kosher. We're not talking treif. Okay, we're thinking, for example, like if you're koshering a barbecue, you wanted to kosher your barbecue for Pesach, not that I recommend it. Okay, so it's kosher a whole year, and how many times did you grill bread on your barbecue?
Almost no, like
yeah.
That.
Yeah. And if you did, how many crumbs are still sitting in there?
Almost no, like
none.
That.
None. Okay, but you're gonna barbecue this. You're gonna burn the heck out of this thing to get rid of any mashahu of hummus that might be.
Right.
But it was kosher before.
Sure, of course it was.
But it's not kosher enough.
Right.
Now. So that's what we're talking about. Okay? We're going to assume that till now you did pretty good.
Yeah.
That's the way Judaism works. Till now, you did pretty good. You know what? We're gonna bump you up a level.
Here's where to start from.
And so what do you have to do is you have to have what to think about.
Yeah.
That's where Chassidus comes in.
Yes, it does.
Chassidus provides that, I call it mental floss, for your brain. Just gets into all the nooks and crannies, takes out all of the little pieces that are stuck in there, gets rid of them, and gives you that pearly white smile of a brain. Pardon my mixed metaphor. Okay? So now that you've got what to think about, okay, so now go think about it. Because, like, for example, before davening, if a person has what to think about before davening, it's not just, oh, I learned a mimer. Let me show there's the easiest button in this. You learn a mimer, and then you tell yourself a story. There's this concept in among Hasidim of reciting maimorim bal peh. Okay, you have these little kids, you have in the yeshiva over here, a 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old bachurim can sit down and they can recite a mimer by heart for half an hour. Yeah. And everybody goes, ooh, wow, right. That's incredible. He recited a mimer for half an hour. I got news for you. If you took the same kid and you put him in an hour and a half movie and you sat him down and you told him, tell me everything you remember of that movie, he'd be able to sit and tell you the story of the movie. Mm-hmm. Okay, so learning the mimer, if you learn the mimer, so it's like learning a story. You have a pasuk, a divrei maschil, which is a pasuk in Tanakh someplace, or a mimer chazal, a gemara, a medrash, or something like that. And there's a question which is asked. And then there's tangents which are raised from the question, and there's a whole long explanation about the tangent. And then we come back full circle, and we come back, we answer the question, and we understand the pasuk. And that's the way, basically, the gist of all the mimer. So if you get that, all you got to do is plug in all the component parts, and voila, you can sit and you can talk about it. So here it is, when we're davening, you shouldn't be telling yourself stories. That's fine. But you should pardon the expression, we're talking about emes. So somebody who's holding by Goldilocks and the Three Bears, okay, fine. So he'll sit, and he'll learn a mimer, and he'll say it over to himself before davening, all the things that he said in the mimer. Okay? Fine. And he'll have a wonderful davening.
Just right.
Okay? That's right. And all the malachim will clap. Yay! And he'll take a bow. Thank you very much. Okay? No, that's fine and better. It's better than nothing.
Sure. Okay? It's where to start from.
Yes. But now, so what does a person have to do? Is a person then has to, when they've got the mimer and they got the story, okay, so now there's a difference between sitting and telling over the story of a mimer and sitting and telling the story of a movie.
Yeah.
It's now, where's the elokus in all of this?
Where is it? What is it?
Where do I fit into all the elokus in all this?
Yeah. What is
when a person then does that, they're not just telling the mimer, they're now living the mimer.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, so at now, when a person is doing that, if a person's living a mimer, so their brain is not in the same place.
Yeah, and there's emes.
Okay, they're in alignment with Chachmasa v'Ratzono Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Yeah,
and I'm preparing now my e-parsha, and in it I was reminded that when I was in Melbourne, so there was a gentleman who was really the head of the Lubavitcher community. He was sent there by the Friedrich Rebbe. His name was Zalman Sarabransky. There were five families that were sent from Pucking, which was the DP camp in Germany after World War II, to Melbourne, Australia, to take care of Yiddishkeit there. And I don't know if Zalman was appointed by the Friedrich Rebbe to be the head, or he just naturally
gravitated,
just rose up.
He just did it because that's who he was.
Okay. Yeah. So his grandson told me that when they all got to Pucking, so there was one Lubavitcher there already, who owned orchards. Mm-hmm. And all the guys, these five families, they moved to this area called Shepperton, which is where all these orchards were, and he employed them to pick and run the orchards.
Really?
So this Zalman Sarabransky, I think, did it for a day and said, I wasn't put on this earth to pick apples.
There you go.
And he opened up a yeshiva like a week later.
There you go.
Okay. So then when I knew him, in the 80s, there were probably about 30,000 Jews in Melbourne, and I would say he knew about two-thirds of them. Because he would go from 1948 until that day that I knew him, he would go to every bris, pidyon haben, bar mitzvah, wedding, funeral. Everybody knew Reb Zalman.
Right.
Okay? So I approached him and said, listen, there's something I want to learn. There's a sefer I want to learn. And I can't find a chavrusa for it. Maybe you could find time once a week. Maybe we could learn. So he said, what is it? I said, it's the Shalah Kaddish, which is a sefer written by Isaiah Horowitz. It's kind of an one of the lesser obscure svarim.
Mm-hmm.
There's obscure svarim. This would be considered an obscure sefer, but it's one of the lesser of the obscure svarim. A lot of Hasidus is actually based on the writings of the Shalah. So he said, it's a very good idea. I never learned it. Okay? So we sat there for 4 years and we learned Shalom once a week from 9 until 10. So I thought, he's giving me special time. But then I realized I'm not the only one. He had a full day like this where people come and sit and learn. So it happened when sometime that he came, that somebody came in and said, excuse me, Reb Zalman, for interrupting you, but I have this deal. And I need to know, should I invest my money in this thing or invest in this thing? So he gave him this business advice. So the guy said, thank you very much. He was very happy. He got this advice from Reb Zalman. I said to him, Reb Zalman, you're a Yudea Sefer. You know from books. You know about yeshivas. You don't know from business and investments. How come he's asking you your opinion? And so he said, if your brain is in the right place, you see things clearly.
That's it.
So that even something which didn't involve the directly Torah and mitzvahs, something so schmutzig as a business deal, see if the investment should go or not go, so he could see. Now, I don't know at the end of the story if the guy was successful or not. I mean, there is the story with Shmuel Gerari, who was the chassid of the Rebbe Rashab, and he was traveling on a train. This would have been in the early 1900s in Russia.
Yeah.
And there's a group of Hasidim, and they're all telling wonders, maifsim, about their Rebbe. And so they turn to Reb Shmuel, and they said, no, Shmuel, Zagas on maifis from Lubavitcher. They used to call the Rebbes by the name. They didn't say, not the Lubavitcher, Rebbe, by the Lubavitcher. Okay? So he said, I once had an opportunity to ask the Rebbe Rashab about a certain investment. And I asked him, should I invest in this or not? So he said, yeah. And he said, so the Rebbe told me I should invest heavily in this venture. Yeah, what happened? I lost my pants. So he looked at him and said, so where's the miracle? So he said, the miracle is I'm still a chassid of the Rebbe Rashab. That's the miracle. Okay, so, because... So not necessarily as a business, you know, I tell people, don't ask me business advice, what do I know, you know, so, and lately I've been jokingly say that because I passed the test on bovine anatomy, I can answer all your problems, right? Okay, I had to tell some rabbi what the inside of a cow looks like and all the abnormalities that could possibly be,
right.
And he gave me a certificate suitable for framing,
right.
And now I can answer everybody's problems.
Mm.
Yep. and people expect me to, and so I have to go learn psychology and business acumen so I can know, you know, or learn Torah how to think properly. And I'll be the last one to profess that I have the answers to everybody's problems. Yeah. So I can't even figure out my own answers. I mean, you know, so.
Yeah.
So he says here now. So he says, what does he have to do? A person has to think. And no, that's the idea of taking that mimer and seeing where do I fit in. Thinking about it is his bininess.
Yeah.
Knowing where I fit in, that's
right.
Das.
Right.
That's connecting it, making it real. Taking it out of the realm of the storybook.
Right.
And bringing it down into this world.
Right.
And what are we thinking about? The greatness of Hashem.
Right.
And one of the greatest things, he doesn't say right here, right away, but the greatest thing that we can think about Hashem is with all this, Hashem wants a relationship with me.
Go figure.
Okay? When a person gets to, this is the difference between, say, the Ramchal, who was considered a Musarnik, and Chaim Lozato in Chassidus. Ramchal writes a sefer. What does he write about? Spheres and Olamos and Seder Yistalshalos, and he wants you to think about it and to realize what it is and how the creation works, and then think of all the things that you muck up when you muck up. That's his conclusion.
Yeah.
Okay? So by Chassidus, it's think about spheres and Olamos and Seder Yistalshalos, and now think that with all of that, Hashem is doing it so he can have a personal relationship with you.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The whole business.
It has a very humbling effect. Makes you feel good, too. I mean, you know, wow, all that for me? In case he says, Eisha, Achilo, Eilmas, Elyanim, Lamaila, Maila, Adi, in case, Kalo, Mamish, Hashivi, Kameh. How, what is he thinking about that even, you know, we learn all about the Seder Yistalshalos in great detail through all of the works of Kabbalah which are introduced through Chassidus, and we learn about how each Olam operates and what's higher than the Olamos and before the first Tzimtzum, and you have all good things that we could talk about. And what is it for Hashem? Nothing. All that for Hashem is like nothing. He calls Shef and V'chayosam because all of the godliness that goes into creating them and they're enlivening them, Ein Arak Meziva Ha'orem Me'ois Yu Echad Meshmai Yisbarach. Because everything that goes into the creation of the whole entire creation process is only with the channeling of godliness, which is analogous or analogized by one letter. Kemaimer, as our sages say, B'yud Nivra Olam Haba, and with the, he just says Kula, which means you don't have to know the rest of it, and with the Hey Olam Haza. The Olam Haba is a lot bigger than Olam Haza, because Olam Haza only lasts for 6,000 years. Olam Haba lasts until the end of time. And Olam Haba is created, the energy that it took to bring Olam Haba into existence is analogized with a Yud. A Yud is the smallest letter. It's chump change. All of this stuff.
Yeah.
That's why the Alter Rebbe, in all sincerity, he wasn't playing games. When he said, I don't want your Olam, I don't want your Gan Eden HaElyon, I don't want your Olam Haba, I want you.
Yeah.
Because the Alter Rebbe sat and thought and said, well, if we can relate to it, however good it is, even if you're talking about Mashiach, and all the things that it talks about, that the three dimensions are going to convey infinity, for example,
it's still just stuff.
It's still just three dimensions.
Just stuff.
It's very good. It's wonderful. But Alter Rebbe said, I want the real thing. That's not the Zach. That's not the Etzem.
Yeah.
I don't want to have
stuff.
The chump change.
It's my stuff.
I want the real thing.
Yeah.
So this is what a person thinks about. A person thinks this is very humbling. Vihine Beziv Vaharizu Shuhihi Spashtis Achayas Mishmayis Barach. And from this little ray, this emanation of a dissemination of the godliness from Hashem's name, because of all, it's the Yud is the world to come, and the Hey is this world, so that's Yud and Hey. Based on the Pasuk, everything's got to be based on a Pasuk, but Yud Ke Hashem Tzur Olamim. With the Yud and Hey, with Ka, that we would read it if you were reading it, you would say, Ka Hashem Tzur Olamim. When we say it for the point of drasha, we say Bi Yud K, Hashem Surah Alamin. So that means with the Yud and the Hey, Hashem made. Hashem is the noun over there. Yud and K is the facilitator of the it's the indirect object which is having the effect on the object, which is the world.
Right.
Okay. So Yud and K is the indirect object. The noun is Hashem. The world is the object. the direct object.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is it that Hashem used to make this world and the next world is the Yud and the Hey. And that's all. Causes there to be a difference between this world and the world to come. It's interesting to note that if you're looking at the effect of a yud versus the effect of the hey, the yud is a dot. And therefore, any type of godliness that's going to come from it and be expression that's going to be analogized by the yud is only going to be pinpoint godliness. Whereas the hey has its, an expanse, it has a breadth.
Right.
So there, the godliness is going to be a full plane
with
of breath. Existence.
Right.
So that would mean that if the world,
this world is far more.
This world has a lot more godliness in it than the world to come.
Yes, it does.
Now, let's first of all explain why that's not true, and then let's explain why that is true.
Okay,
because when you're talking a dot, so what are the parameters of a dot?
None.
What are the limits on a dot? A dot has no limits. It's
right.
Limitless by definition.
Correct.
It doesn't have a definition. Right? What's a dot? What's a point?
Geometry, a point is...
It occupies a place.
It's a finite place.
It occupies a place.
That's it.
Okay? And now if you want to throw some physics in there, throw some quantum mechanics, you can't even know where that dot is.
Correct.
A particle, you can't know.
Yeah, you can't even know where that dot is, according to quantum physics.
Right, correct.
Okay? So therefore, that dot has infinite possibilities.
It's true.
True.
Yeah.
Okay, so therefore, the world to come is a whole lot bigger because there's a lot of infinite possibilities.
Correct. Okay.
Whereas this world has a length and a breadth.
Has boundaries.
And it's got very limited, it has limitations.
Right, right, structured.
Okay, so in that aspect you could say that the world to come is a whole lot better.
Of course.
Because infinity versus
finite.
Limitations.
Right, limitations.
Okay. But infinite what versus finite what? You're talking about infinite possibilities versus finite realities.
There
you go. So this world has a length and a breadth. The length and a breadth is also elokus.
Right.
So what is in this world? What's making this world? Okay, it's a very limited amount of godliness. Mm. But the possibilities in this world are... No. The actualities in this world are realized.
Right.
Such that... And when you realize that when the potential is realized...
Yeah, it's not potentials.
You have now an actual...
Right. Actualized.
So what you get, the Alter Rebbe explains in a zillion places in Chassidus, is this is where you find the Etzem of Hashem.
Yeah.
Because this is the whole reason, as it says, Nayis Tchilos and Besoifam, the end is implanted in the beginning.
Wow.
And this is where you have the essence of Hashem.
Actualization.
Is here. She'olam hazeh nivra behe. That this world is created with the hey. And since it is, this is an absolute concrete existence that we live in. So therefore, the godliness is realized, its full potential is realized in the actual, and the essence of Hashem is found here. So this is the place where to be.
Right, right.
This is just where we're starting from.
Right.
So we got up to page 422, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top. And in the English, it's by the 8, also all the differences in the details. To be continued.